You know, that really is the perfect song to just raise the energy and lead to me introducing myself. You know, many of you know me really well, and some of you are just starting to get to know me a little bit. And I kind of just throw my life out here in the talks. It's maybe I'm using you as some kind of therapy, and I apologize, but it works well for me. I hope you get something out of it. Boy, old eyes here. How many were here 3 weeks ago when I spoke on my birthday? Raise your hand if you were here. So that's about a little less than half. Okay, so for those of you who heard a little bit about what's going on, I'm sorry, I have to fill the rest in a bit. When I was talking with Jessie before the service started and she shared her story, I said, I kind of understand, but I realize I don't completely understand because I haven't had the significant loss that you're experiencing to be at the place where you've lost your home. Essentially, you're homeless, and thank goodness you have your car. And I cannot begin to relate to the challenges you have. What I can share with all of you, though, is that you had made a comment that at this age you never thought you would be in this place. And like you, at age 52, I've been with the same company for 23 years, and I'm actually the HR manager. And 2 months ago, the owner of the company sat me down and said, I'm cutting your job in half, I'm cutting your salary in half, and I'm taking away your health insurance. And I'm the HR manager. So that was, I'm not where you are, but it was quite a shock and a rude awakening for me to think, wow, you know, I worked so hard all my life, I expected to have some stability. But I've been very diligent in the last 8 weeks to try and keep my life going. And I came up with a new joke the other day, which is I'm cutting my, you know, all of these things have been cut in half, so I'm cutting my water use in half and my food in half, which is a good thing. But I realized today that I'm not going to cut my deodorant in half. No, I'm going to continue to splurge and do the both arms. So you'll be happier and I will too. Especially now that we're finally getting summer. So, but it's a challenge. It's a challenge to suddenly have to be faced with some new creative thinking when you think your life is on a certain path and it's changing. And so this talk tonight is about trusting God, and it's about having a safety net. And the safety net, on one hand, could be, you know, $50,000 in savings. Well, I haven't got that. Most of us don't have that kind of financial safety net. So the true safety net is God and God's children that we surround ourselves with, people who have the like mind, who can remind us that when we trip and fall, hey, I'm caught that same step and I fell right there myself 6 months ago, and now I'm standing up, and let me mirror for you what it is to get back up when you fall. I really am going to have a little difficulty reading this, the lighting, but bear with me. So to kind of go back in my story a little bit, and I talked about this 3 weeks ago, about a year ago, a dear friend of mine from this church family, she and I were having dinner, and she said, if you could do anything, what would it be? And I said, well, I would love to become a hospice chaplain to work with the dying and their families at the time of transition. But at the time, I'm working full-time, I've got kids, I've got all my commitments at church. You know, the thought of going back to school and doing something else was, you know, just a crazy whim. So I let it go. And then when I got this news 2 months ago, the same woman was here on Wednesday night, 4 hours after I got the news, and I hadn't seen her in a year. And she's like, Barbara, what's wrong? And I said, oh, I'm in shock. And she said, do you remember what you said a year ago? And I said, yeah. And she said, why not do it? Why not do it? And so for the last 8 weeks, I've been asking myself, why not turn my life upside down and go back to school and figure out a new career? And at age 56, 4 years from now, maybe work with dying patients and their families. So once I allowed myself to start articulating this and started telling my spiritual family and trusted friends at work and some other people, the word started going out like this ripple. And all of a sudden, these wonderful blessings have come to me. Some of you know that I co-parent with a gay male couple, John and Triton, and they've been out of town for a couple weeks in Italy, and they're very lucky, but they're back. So when they came back, I sat them down, I said, this is what I want to be when I grow up. And they're like, you'd be so great at it. And then John said, and you know, San Diego Hospice is one of my clients. He has his own advertising and PR firm, and he has done their marketing for a couple years, and the woman who just moved into the CEO position is the woman he dealt with for the last 4 years. He's like, when do you want to meet her? I'm like, let me get my foot in the door as a volunteer first and learn the lay of the land. So then a week goes by, and Vancine, who's another person in our church community, she found out what I wanted to be when I grow up, and so she sent an email out to her whole email list, people I've never heard of. She said, I have this friend who wants to do this, who knows people who know people. Lo and behold, these emails start flooding back to her, and she sends them to me, and she's like, two women at San Diego Hospice want to give you a tour, and they want to buy you lunch, and they want to tell you all about it. So that's what I did this afternoon. I got the insider tour from a woman who's been there for 15 years. Last week, over the weekend, a niece of a friend of a friend, this young woman needs a new living situation, and I'm going to have an opening for a roommate probably September 1, and she really needs to get into a new situation right away. So I met her on Monday, and she works for a different hospice organization as a social worker. And I've been selling my stuff online to try to raise some money so I can get some health insurance. And something didn't sell in my yard sale over the weekend, so I put an ad on Craigslist and responded back to this woman. And as I hit send, I looked at her email address. It said at San Diego Hospice. Okay, God, you know, I think you are reminding me that I'm not alone in this despair, you know? I think you're telling me that your children here are here to support me. And so all of us have had some kind of major loss, whether it's the loss of a relationship, a marriage breaks up, or the loss of a loved one to death, or the loss of a job. We've all had those moments where we're like, I don't know how I'm going to deal with this. I am just so in shock or overwhelmed or hurting, and I'm not sure that I can go on. And I'm here to tell you that, you know, I've been there. I've been there. I remember when my mother died very suddenly from a brain aneurysm, just thinking, I've lost my best friend here. She was 59, and she was gone like this. But in her wisdom and in her connection with God, she brought me to this church 3 months later. And today, as I was meeting with these women at hospice, they're, you know, tell us your story a little bit. And I said, you know, it has been proven to me that there is no death. And I shared how when my mom died, I went through her wallet. I wasn't stealing her money, but my dad couldn't cope with going through things. And I found this little slip of paper, and she died right before Christmas. Her funeral was on Christmas Eve day. And she had just gotten her first two grandchildren within the last 6 or 8 months prior. And in her wallet was this little slip of paper, and it said, children's book, love you forever. And I can't remember the author's name, but if anybody's seen that book, it's quite a tearjerker about a mother who has this little boy, and he grows through stages, and she always sings this little song to him, I'll love you forever, no matter what, you know, and then they show him turning into this angry teenager, and she's like, yeah, I'll love you forever, no matter what. But as the book goes through, she starts to age until she's finally elderly and ill, and he's holding her and rocking her and singing the song back to her. So I think my mom intended to buy that book for her grandchildren, but here it was in her wallet 2 days after she died saying, I will love you forever. And then about a month later, my dad sent this huge box of my mom's recipes to me because I come by these fat cells through really good cooking. And I was hoisting the box up on a shelf, and my mom loved to rip things out of magazines that she was going to make someday, you know. Some recipes got made, some didn't, but she loved her recipes. So I'm lifting this box up, and this little piece of paper falls, and it goes like this. It's just, and it lands in my hand, and I maybe told this story before, but bear with me. But it was a little poem she had ripped out of a magazine, and it said, happy have we met, happy have we been, happy will we be when we meet again. 1 month after she died. They use our loved ones, our family members love us, and they are going to use whatever they can to communicate that love for us. And we just have to keep our eyes, ears, and our hearts open to these messages. So I truly believe that Sherry was placed there by God on the day that I lost half of my job to be my reminder that, you know what, you articulated this a year ago, and it's time to put it out there even more. And so I've been trying to find the courage to do that. And each time I tell somebody, somebody else says, that's a really groovy thing, you know, and we're going to help you. So anyway, long story short, to get to my goal, I need to get another degree. And I've looked at a school in Pasadena, which seems like a really great campus, but the commute to Pasadena is a little bit overwhelming. And there's a school here in San Diego that I interviewed at yesterday. And they're a little more conservative than I am, and I'm not sure they would like our thought pattern. So it was a difficult conversation yesterday. I'm telling you the story because I'm just... But you know, when I get here and I stand in front of all of you, this feels so right, knowing that my mom still communicates with me, my dad communicates with me, my brother Bob, who died of brain cancer, communicates with me. I wish I could tell the whole world that what we believe truly is true. Van Seen today, when we were at this meeting, sorry, I'm getting all hot and bothered. This one woman who had worked there for 15 years, she said, you know, one day I just got to the place where I know that I know that I know. And Van Seen and I looked at each other. For those of you who know Millie, you know, getting to the place where you know that you know that you know, we're like, have you been spying on our church? We've never seen her before. And we're like, we know, you know. We know what you know. And it's all good. So I was telling Jane on the way over tonight that yesterday I didn't feel completely comfortable at that school, but being at San Diego Hospice today, I felt very comfortable. I felt like I was surrounded by people who, they might not have exactly the same belief system that we do, but they're open to all the possibilities. And one reason I am so comfortable at this church is because we believe that truth can be found in all religions, all philosophies, and in science. There isn't one source of truth. So my struggle right now is to figure out how I'm going to make this happen, because commuting to Pasadena 3 hours each way is a heck of a commute, and the school here in San Diego may not accept me. I have to write a couple page essay about my spiritual journey, and you know, I have to be honest with them, and I have to be honest with myself, because if it's not a good fit, it's not going to do me any good to spend a lot of money and 3 years of my life if at some point they're going to say, you know, you're not the kind of Christian we like or that we can support or endorse to try and go out in the world and get a job. But the beautiful thing about being 52 and having spent 20 years in this place is that I know that I know that I know. I know what's true for me. And it's not my place to judge anybody else's spiritual beliefs. If they, after they read my essay, can welcome me in, I'm open to learning from them, and hopefully that can work. It certainly would be much easier if I could do my schooling here in San Diego and still be here for choir and Wednesday night and the other things I do here. So that's my struggle. But I do have a couple verses here for those of us who at times feel like God has separated us, or we feel a little distance, because we sometimes feel like we can't see or feel God no matter where we look. And I can't say that's true for me now, because, boy, God is just giving me so many reminders that I'm tripping over them. But, you know, even Mother Teresa said it at one point that she had a crisis of faith, that she was looking all of this all around her in Calcutta and just said, where is God in all of this? I am overwhelmed. And, you know, she's trying to put her finger in the dam. And I kind of laughed when we started singing High Hopes, because some of the spiritual walk is a walk of that ant trying to move a rubber tree plant. You know, it's like, it looks pretty impossible, but we're called to try it anyway, and to act. Lindy gave a wonderful talk on Sunday, and the three letters were ACT. Let's see if I can remember. A was ask, C is commit, and T is trust. And so I'm quoting her a little bit, and she quoted me a little bit, because I really see faith is an action verb, because you have to act. You have to move forward and do some of the work in order for God and the angels to do their part. So in some of my reading about getting through these tough times, I was referred to Job, poor Job in the Old Testament. You know, he really had the woes, and you're just like, what else can happen to this guy? But the reading reminded me that he still, even when he felt like he couldn't see and hear and feel God, he still believed God was there, and he knew that God still loved him, and that God was still all-powerful, and that God still knew every detail of his life, even if he felt like he didn't know where God was. And at the end of the day, Job knew that God would save him. And at the end of the day, for all of us who have come to this knowing that there is no death, and we do have trials and tribulations now, we will move beyond these things. When I was talking with these women at hospice today, and they're, you know, one of the key things of hospice is pain management. You know, they call it palliative care, fancy word for get me out of pain and give me the morphine. But for people in severe pain at the end of their life, it must, I can't even imagine I cannot imagine. But if you know God and you have that faith and that belief somewhere, even if it's just one atom in you while all the others are fighting the pain, if that one little piece of you can remember that God is going to get you through this, it helps you take another breath. But back to one other part of this talk, which is having a safety net. All of you, whether you chose it or not, just by being here, you're my safety net. And God wants us to look at each other and help each other, and when one of us falls, to pick each other up and to be mirrors of faith when someone's faith is being sorely tested. And I may tell you a month from now, if I speak again, that the school in San Diego didn't accept me. And, you know, I might feel sad, or I might feel, whew, dodged a bullet. I'm not sure how I'll feel. But I know that if I don't get in, you'll all still give me some words of encouragement and tell me there is still a plan. God has shown you, Barbara, that there is a plan for your life, that is your second career, your new passion that you have acknowledged, and there is going to be a way to make it happen. It might not be the way I wanted it to happen. I got children in a very unconventional way. I always wanted children, and I never met Mr. Wright. I looked into adoption as a single parent, and that didn't work out. So when these two very handsome, very kind, loving men said to me, "Do you want to make a baby together?" I'm like, turkey baster. So anyway, we told you I'd make you laugh a little bit. But we went the adoption route, and we have two precious children that we got from the delivery room, and I have a home right next to their home, and the girls go back and forth, and it takes a village. Sometimes we're a village of idiots, but the three of us are raising two precious daughters. And if you had asked me at age 35, imagine this way of becoming a parent, I would have said, I can't imagine that. But God had a plan, and we truly believe in this church that children, the souls on the other side, choose the parents. And I always marvel at what Sophia and Ava, my daughters, had to go through in order to end up with the three of us. But I'm so honored that they did. And so I look at that as a reminder to myself. You, Barbara, you're going to be the oldest mom of any high school graduate when you're 65. But you got the blessing of raising children. So I truly believe I'm going to have this other blessing. It might not come in the traditional way. It might mean I'm just meant to be a volunteer at San Diego Hospice, or there might be another school that I just haven't heard about that's going to welcome me in. But what's most important in all of this is that I be honest and stand up for who I am and what I know that I know that I know. And all of you nodding or sending me love are helping to hold me accountable, because it doesn't serve me or serve my spiritual family if I try and be something or someone that I'm not. So I stand before you a spiritualist who knows, and I may or may not be going to school in the fall, but this is home. And this is who I'm going to, this is the belief pattern that fits for me, and I'm going to honor it and respect it by being honest to it and committed to it. And I thank you all for this time and your love. Okay, if anybody's here for the first time that I scared off, we have two doors open and you can leave.